Hey, welcome to Accelerating Operational Performance. I'm Greg Schinkel from Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And you know us for our mandate, which is to help you get more done with less stress, help you in your career progressions, help you accelerate some of the projects that you're working on at your facility. And I've got another great guest today. This episode, by the way, is brought to you by our new site leader development program. So this is for plant managers on essentially how to empower the team and hold them more accountable and make sure that the plant manager can be freed up to do more work in the areas of improving results and growing the business and its capacity. So that's the site leader development program. And of course, you can check that out at uniquedevelopment.com. My guest today is John Heffelfinger from Hendrickson. And if you don't know Hendrickson, they are basically in the the division that John's in, is in the heavy-duty truck suspension business. So these are the pizza parts of the vehicle that you never see that are underneath. Very heavy-duty, of course, for the amount of weight that's involved. And John runs a plant that has a lot of different product configurations out of Kentucky, Somerset, Kentucky. So let me tell you a little bit about John. Today, John is the plant manager at Hendrickson in Somerset, Kentucky, a global commercial transportation industry manufacturer and supplier. John brings a wealth of experience in leading teams and optimizing operations within a complex manufacturing environment. I'm eager to hear his thoughts on driving performance. He and I have had several conversations. He's not a client of ours yet, but maybe someday. And John, I just wanted to say welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this and not only hear from you. I love the opportunity because it helps growth, right?
You got it.
Open conversation about leadership and what we do, right?
Absolutely. Thank you. And one of the reasons why I really liked our conversations that we've had over the last year and a half or so is because you do have a very down-to-earth, common-sense view of things. Behind the scenes, you have the technical chops that are important. I wondered, before we get into too much of the, you know, we have some questions, obviously, that we want to get to. I just wondered whether you could tell people a little bit about your journey to becoming a plant manager, because I thought it was interesting when you told me the first time. What was your path to becoming a plant manager?
Sure. Well, I've worked for Hendrickson for 22 years, and I started out as a painter back in Lebanon, Indiana, so at another facility. And over the years, never saw myself in leadership roles, right? I was always very timid and concerned to move into those roles, but enjoyed the roles as I took them, yep. Right? The challenges were fun and enjoyed working with people. And so I've been several different positions in the company. I've painted, I've assembled, I've been in fabrication. I've worked in machining departments over the years, went back to school. Hendrickson's got a very nice education assistance program that they pay for your education if you're willing to participate in it. So I went back and got my bachelor's degree, became a supervisor in 2011, and transferred to Somerset, Kentucky at that point. And enjoyed it down here. Really enjoy this plant. The culture here is great. Love the people in the area as well. And my time here, I was transitioned into the production manager in 2018. And then right after COVID there is when I transitioned into the plant manager role.
Awesome. Well, that was an interesting time to transition. And I know your business was like super busy with demand during COVID and through that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, since you brought it up, and just by coincidence on the date we're recording this, we just finished wrapping up this site leader development program. So that was the sixth day of a six-day program. And one of the things that came up is the one gentleman, kind of like you, said, I was never thinking I was going to become a plant manager. And then mostly because I saw some of the people above me in some of those roles, and I really didn't think I wanted the level of stress or whatever it was, or maybe I didn't really like how that person was leading and I didn't want to be like that. I'm just curious, what changed your mind, and was it a specific individual who nudged you to consider a leadership role? How did that work?
I would say there was several, and I can think of some very specific conversations that I had especially with the plant manager role. So I had not been in that production manager role very long and was very nervous about transitioning into plant manager role and the additional responsibility. And there was just a lot of concern there. And a gentleman named Perry Barr had a conversation with me and said something that stuck with me. And the only thing that he said in that conversation that really hit was, Hendrickson wants you to succeed, right? And I've had several mentors over the years. Devin was a great leader in this plant, and he was a great person to follow. But when Perry said that, that really struck me, and understanding that the company was going to be there as I needed them and help me find my path, right?
Awesome.
And that meant a lot, I think.
Yeah.
You know, that really helped me realize.
I hope what people will take from that is that, first of all, people pay attention to what leaders say and do. And so you happen to have a good one there who mentioned that to you, and that resonates with you. Really just one line still stands out and is memorable. The other thing I'd point out to anyone on the call, because sometimes, you know, you are leading a team. Partly you want to hold on to your best players. But if you think of someone's career as an S-curve, right, where they initially go in, maybe they struggle a little bit, then they go on the starting to perform better in their role, and then eventually they can also cap out, become bored, or, you know, just lose some of the passion for the role. Is I think the leader's job as well, somebody's on the upslope of their career S curve, is to think about what is the next thing I can help that person see, so that eventually, you know, ideally in someone's career, they go on multiple S curves. So they need to jump to another one where they're maybe not feeling totally confident, but again, development. And just that mindset. So you're lucky, and Hendrickson obviously is lucky to have some leaders that think in a developmental way. So that's pretty awesome. I wondered, it sounds like you actually had a fairly accelerated career path as well in some ways. Is there a time, because at first I'm sure there's a little bit of uncertainty, lack of self-confidence. Is there a specific win that comes to mind, a project you were involved in or a department you were involved in, where you finally locked in and said, maybe I got something here?
Yeah, there's a few. There's one standout that I really enjoyed here at the Somerset facility, and that was the first slider box that was ever produced here in Somerset. So it was a little different product than what we had ever produced in the past, and we had to put a new assembly line in for it, and we saw parts that were very different than what we had ever assembled in the past. So it was a accelerated project. We had a very very tight timeline to make it happen. And we were able to complete it on time and satisfy the customer demands. I still run that product to this day, but that one was shortly after I took this role, and I was really proud of that one. You know, the team did an amazing job, and it helped the company and our customers both equally.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And also, it's nice to have a win. You know, I always like to ask the flip side of that, because, you know, I think a lot of times leaders feel under pressure to always have, you know, been successful. The problem when people paint themselves as always successful, like they've never run into an obstacle or a problem or had a project go sideways, or is it almost makes them seem untouchable. And I think then if anyone else was aspiring for the role, they go, well, I can't do it because, like, John's been perfect or Greg's been perfect. And I know I'm far from perfect and admit a lot of the setbacks that I've had. I'm curious, is there one where you got a tremendous learning from a project that just didn't either go as well, or maybe it hit a hiccup and it was like this awakening that went on in your mind that you learned something from that? Does something come to mind?
Yeah. I don't know if it was necessarily a project. This plant has always had a we can attitude. Matter of fact, we've got some from the other plants, we've gotten presents that were made that had slogans on them like we can do it kind of. And one of the things that changed dramatically after COVID that made it extremely difficult, and I don't want to use the word I'll use the word struggle.
Yeah.
So after COVID, we were unable to hire. And then historically, that was not ever a problem here at our facility. We were always able to meet customer demand and bring people in with any capacity increase and satisfy our customers. And after COVID, for a few years, we struggled to find candidates that could fulfill our job needs, and not even necessarily volume, but skilled candidates that could do the work we needed. You know, when you mentioned earlier that we do such a wide variety and variation within the product we run, it is a little different than other factories in some case. For example, right now we have about 130 2G certified welders, and that's not an easy job to always fill. And that was hard to, it seemed like month over month in our reports, we had to go back, and I was having to say we were not able to meet customer demand, you know, and there was always an expectation of this plant performing. And that was very difficult for me. It was very humbling. No matter how hard we tried, all the things we did, the extra effort we put into recruiting, we were not able to meet the demand that came after that. That was hard.
That's very frustrating. I mean, as you know, you weren't alone in that. I mean, that was something that a lot of companies were dealing with, where the market suddenly tightened up. The other thing I've noticed over the years is there used to be a much wider range, and maybe there still is in the state of Kentucky, but there used to be a nice premium for working in a factory versus some other jobs that might be available depending on your skill level. And I've noticed over the years that the compression in the wage spread isn't there as much anymore. So that's the other thing you have, is that because everyone was looking for people, there's like this demand went up and the wages went up, and then so you could work in a factory, which may or may not be, you know, as nice as some other job. And so not that wages are the only thing, but it does change the dynamic, because usually there's always people who want to who want, you know, a little bit more compensation and a little bit more interesting employment. So thanks for saying that. Yeah, I can only imagine, like, month after month you're kind of in this mode, like, oh, we're not worthy, we didn't hit the number again. And nothing's more frustrating as a business owner and as a plant manager than knowing you could have delivered more, and you just couldn't get it done because you didn't have the talent. I believe, by the way, John, I don't know how you think, I think that, you know, there's ups and downs in the job market availability, and it's certainly gotten better now, but I think we're still in a talent shortage, maybe for the next, I don't know, 10 or 15 or 20 years, and that you really have to focus on being a great place to work. What is it that makes Somerset, like, generally a better spot? Do you have a neat culture there? Is it just something that's been like that? What's the Somerset advantage in some ways?
Yeah, I think there's a few, not only within the community, within the factory as well. There are a few standouts in my mind of the culture here, and I'll talk
Sure.
about the plant first. One of the things that this team does that I truly love, and I think it's really important to protect this in the culture, is they are very good at taking care of one another.
Nice.
And in so many ways, that helps this feel as much like a family as it can in a factory, right? And I'll just give some examples, but life happens to
Yeah, of
everybody. And you
course.
go through events, and sometimes when there's a traumatic event in a coworker or a teammate's life, this team rallies around them. And some of the examples are they will come out and they will do potlucks. Or and they'll raise money to help that employee through his hard time. Or
Wow.
I thought of an example the other day. Gentleman had his wife got in a pretty bad car wreck,
Oh
and
my.
I saw the teammate showing up at his house mowing
Yeah.
his lawn. Like, there's so much more than just another worker
Yeah.
or a number, that they were willing to do those things for one another as
Yeah.
teammates. And so I think that is special to the
Yeah.
culture here in Somerset.
Yeah.
I think that's something we have our core values that we live by, but that's something that the team has adapted to. That's not anything, like I said, as a company, I think we should protect that culture, but it's something that they drive. Those
Yeah.
are things that they put together and run. As far as the community goes, this community is amazing. You know, from the technical schools that help provide us, the 2G welders that I talked about, you know. And a great place to raise a family and live. You know, we have so much outdoor activities and an active community and an active downtown to make it a fun place to live if you're at whatever part of life that you're in, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, on up to retirement. There's so much to do here. Every weekend, there's for such a small community, there is a very, very active environment here.
Awesome. Well, you know, one of the
Yeah.
things I think I remember we've done work, obviously, because people probably can relate to the fact that sometimes these factories are in like very relatively small communities. And what
Yeah.
you're saying is on the positive side is that that works to your advantage when everybody knows each other and so forth. I've seen some people say it's a little bit odd because you see people at work and then you also see them in the grocery store, you see them, you know, on the
Yeah.
ball diamond or whatever. You probably know this, but I wanted to highlight it for the audience that because this came up yesterday again with the plant managers that we had in one of our courses, is when Google actually looked at what made its teams, the high-performing teams, do better than maybe teams that didn't deliver on their results. And this is called Project Aristotle that they did. They really determined that when you distill down like what makes some teams work better than others, two things, and it highlights what you have achieved at Somerset. One is psychological safety, which is just this ability that you can be yourself, but also that the group will both welcome you and also notice when something's off and do something about it. So that's psychological safety. The other piece that you didn't mention, although I think it's probably there, because you said you had values that you state, is solid group norms. And norms don't have to necessarily be written as much as they are just an understanding of the commitments we make to one another. You know, on this team. And what the interesting side benefit of having some solid group norms is if you ever do have a disruptive influence come in, like an agitator or a difficult person, if there's a solid group norm, those agitators actually start to assimilate into the group and they don't behave in as disruptive a way. Whereas if you have a loose group with not very great norms, a disruptive person comes in and essentially really causes a lot of havoc. So, without even knowing it, you're actually achieving and maintaining those two important things to high performance teamwork. So, John, I know that you're very familiar with 5S and lean and continuous improvement. What I'm interested in is there's the technical aspect of lean and continuous improvement in the toolbox. And you've probably seen lean initiatives that have worked well and maybe ones that just didn't. I was just curious what you've picked up out of that mix and flow as to what is the lesson you've learned about really getting the most from these initiatives.
Yeah, that's such an interesting question, and it's something we have struggled with so much. You mentioned 5S, and over the years, when we have rolled out new 5S initiatives and trying to find new ways to create excitement and engagement and even empowerment in those types of I don't know that there's an end game. I don't think there can ever be. I think it's like living life. You have to learn to continuously work on any of those lean principles or 5S, but getting the engagement or involvement from every team member, I think, is so important. And making sure that they're involved in the planning and the training and how their station is set up. You know, and as a leader, I think it's so important to try and set the environment so that it is in a way that every teammate feels safe to speak up. You know, those brainstorming sessions in the beginning, and getting feedback and input from every teammate and doing follow-up on what they are saying, is probably one of the more difficult pieces in my mind. I think it's really easy to sit in a boardroom and lay out a structure of how we are going to do 5S. And I think the challenge is making sure that everybody is involved in that planning and not creating that plan in a boardroom.
You got it. I mean, when we talk about leading change in our frontline leadership program, we talk about, you know, a lot of change initiatives, people have spent weeks or months sometimes, you know, designing them. And then when, but when they get released to the floor, it's always like, surprise. And by the way, here's what we need you to do. And we didn't ever tell you about it much. And we didn't ask you about it much, but just do these things. And then you're kind of ramming it from a compliance standpoint. So I think I think every leader sort of sees it can be, it feels like it's frustratingly slow sometimes to go back to the involvement. But we know that in the end, that slowing down to go fast really just helps these initiatives gain traction. So I think that's a great learning. I think are familiar on one of our calls, we talked about decision-making waste or the tendency sometimes for leaders at higher levels to get involved in solving problems, you know, at lower levels, and often in manufacturing, everybody on the team is swarming to solve daily frustrations and hassles. And what we kind of dream about is this idea of empowerment and accountability. And I'm just curious what you've noticed. And again, I don't think it's a destination as much as just a constant thrust or drive. What's your view on getting people more, I guess, more empowered, more accountable, getting leaders to stop meddling and micromanaging? Do you have a take on that?
Yeah. Just me speaking from my experience, mm-hmm. I think it is so important to reward the try and not necessarily the success of a project, but the effort. And I think that helps create more of that effort and making it visible to others. So I think it's just as important to fail, but basically reward the trial.
Yeah.
You know, the success will come. I think we'll learn from every trial we do. And you can see it in some leaders. And I'll say this too, there's been so many times I've seen a mistake that I've made, you know, opportunity.
Of course.
Where I could have built another leader up a little bit, and you try to make up for those later. But I would say in one line, it really comes down to rewarding the try.
I love that. And by the way, so another guest that we've had on the podcast, which is, again, a team member who I was working with at this plant manager course that we were doing, Jason McKenzie. Jason actually said, and I'll just mention it because it is what you're saying, he says there's a difference between appreciation and recognition. And he says most people don't think of it. They think of it sort of as this blended thing. Recognition is usually about the outcome, like a win that we had. He says appreciation is what people brought to the effort in trying to achieve the outcome, whether the outcome was successful or not. So appreciating that people did make contributions, that they did do what they thought was right, that they did, you know, have positive expectations. Maybe the outcome didn't happen. So you can't say, let's recognize the win. It's like, let's appreciate the efforts that we made and know that if we do that again, we will probably be successful. Like if we're relentless in doing the right things, we'll eventually have it win for us. So I think it's great that you brought that up, that it's celebrating, essentially celebrating the tries. And I know it can frustrate anybody who's listening to the podcast, who's more of a micromanager, more of a, we have to win every day. I was like nobody does. You don't as a listener, even if you think of yourself as a perfectionist. It's just doing the best that you can on a relentless basis to achieve the results. And so I love that you said that, celebrate the try. A lot of talk these days, although I said to a client even this morning, I said, I don't think we'll be talking about multi-generational, you know, motivation problems, or at least it'll go fallow for a while and maybe come up again, you know, in 5 or 10 years. But right now, a lot of people struggle with like younger people and their level of motivation and work ethic. I just wondered what's your take on the multi-generations? Because I'm sure at Somerset, you must have like a wide range of ages in people working in the factory. What's your view and what advice, either what have you learned, what would you advise leaders to do about different generations?
Yeah, we have tried so many different things over the years. And I think some of The communication piece has been a struggle for us, but I think we have found some success in how we communicate to the workforce. And as you know, the different generations seem to appreciate communication in different ways. And so when we do send out communication, we really try to make sure that it is across the board, in person. We still do monthly mailers. We have our monthly communication meetings in person. We have a text out group that we can send messages to the phones. But it seems like in our surveys, the information we get back is communication is usually one of the more frustrating things. So we try to focus some energy and effort there to make sure we're doing everything we can to communicate effectively. If that's what is frustrating to an employee, that's what we want to try to make an impact on. As far as the work goes or work ethic, we do a really nice job at every station has what we call an RE, realistic expectation.
Love it.
And so we'll do a time study over multiple shifts and multiple operators, and we'll come up with an average, and then we expect 85% of what is possible in that station for the RE. And that helps everybody understand what their expectation is. I think it's so important for anybody in any role to have an understanding of what winning looks like a little bit. I know you said earlier about you don't have to win every day, but I think a lot of people are competitive
Oh, for sure.
and
Well, they
they
all want
like
to
to
win.
understand.
They all, like competitive, by the way, just since you brought it up, competitive, the dark side of competitive is me competing against another department, which, I'm not probably going to address in the podcast today. Sometimes we'll dive into that. But competitive around just wanting to win and wanting to do better and even competing against yourself or competing against the realistic expectation, which I really love the way you put that label on it. I think that's what everybody wants. And so if you don't make it clear what a win looks like and even instill this, people have a sense of people actually want achievement. But sometimes we confuse achievement and competitiveness, but it's like people want to win. Like if you're a better golfer than I am, for example, yeah, okay, it'd be nice if I beat you, but let's say you're like way better than me. I'm mostly competing against myself and whether I, did as good as I normally do or slightly better. And in fact, if you said beating me was your goal and you're 10 shots better than me on the golf course, you're not, you could say, yeah, I beat Greg. Well, whoop-de-doo, that wasn't that a hard thing. So I think achievement is really what you're talking about. And I think just this instilling in people, do you know what a win is? Did you win or did you not win? What are you going to do to win tomorrow? I think is really a great way of viewing it.
Yeah, I love how you changed that there. That was you want people to go home and be happy with what they completed today, and they have that pride in what they did.
Well, and I like how, like, we started by talking about multiple generations and we ended up talking about achievement and winning. First of all, kudos to you to recognize that the communications is different. But recognize that no matter what generation people come from, they want to be successful. They want to add value. And so most of our job is to create a circumstance where they can feel that sense. And if they don't, because you're not going to win every day, it's like acknowledging it, moving forward. Again, let's just do the things we know that fundamentally will create good outcomes and keep at it. So thank you for that. I think that's a good way of thinking about the multi-generational workforce. The reason I say we'll eventually phase it out is I notice now that more and more younger people are even into their first leadership roles. It's not as big a deal as it was when we had people in their mid-50s leading people in their 20s. We're starting to bridge the gap. And then so eventually when I say it'll not be an issue is we just won't need to talk about it again until, sometime down the road when there's another big technological change that causes these big differences. We've covered a lot of ground so far today, John, and I know I didn't get to every question that I said we might talk about. Was there something that you wanted to share about leadership, or what would help somebody in their career, or something that you think would be helpful for the audience?
The only thing that comes to mind that I didn't speak out loud is in these roles, probably something that was a struggle for me at first. and I'm still work on daily, right? Where I came from, the operations is understanding that my job is no longer necessarily always to do. It's to either create an environment that is friendly for somebody else to do or assist them and get the resources they need.
You got it.
But
The fancy term is servant leadership, but also that just speaks to the whole leadership decision-making waste. Like, the job is really to facilitate other people in doing the work and being there to support them in their development and their growth. This is why I wanted you on the podcast, because and I love your humility too, and acknowledging that even though I think anyone else looking at your career path and what you've achieved would be quite impressed, I love that you're still more like, hey, this is about our team. This is about development and growth. I've been given opportunities. I want people to also see that they have opportunities. That'll serve you well. The other thing I think you've probably seen, although you might not be eager to jump up to the next level yet, I don't know, but it's like once you kind of get the once you kind of unlock some of these secrets, you realize that it doesn't really matter what leadership role you have at any given level. You can just kind of rinse and repeat and do the same things, knowing, yeah, the scope might get a little bit bigger, the responsibilities get bigger, the zeros get bigger, but it's like it's the same process over and over again. So I just want to say thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. By the way, I know most of our audience isn't in the market to buy truck suspension components, but of course you can look up Hendrickson at Hendrickson-intlinternational.com. John Heffelfinger can be found on LinkedIn if you want to connect with him. He's a good guy to be connected with. Otherwise, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. And as a listener, thank you for investing 30 minutes of your time in developing your career path. What's fascinating to me is to hear all these different stories from people that we have on the podcast. Of course, a podcast can be wonderful, but the thing that makes it even more valuable is when more people discover it. So if you can mention it to someone you know or do a post about it, we'd really appreciate it. If you want to leave us a review, those things actually do matter in terms of the algorithms. So you can do that on your favorite podcasting app. Of course, we do it on YouTube. We also have it on all the audio podcasting apps. If there's any way that we can be of service to you in your leadership journey or your organization in terms of leadership development, if you like our vibe, check us out at our website at uniquedevelopment.com. Otherwise, I'll just bid you success on your leadership journey.